It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio in Chicago. Thank you for being with me as we roll into the last bit of March here. Last week, I gave you a blow-by-blow on what it was like to be in Greenland and how different it was. And I've been asked by many people and through emails this week, would I go back? And I think the answer is very simple. I had a once-in-a-lifetime experience that was so different from anything I experienced in my life before that I don't think I would jump on the next plane to go back to Greenland to go eider hunting in March, to roll around in the North Atlantic. It was one of those things that you do once, and you put it in the category of an incredible experience. I've had many hunting experiences through my life, and fishing experiences, and outdoor camping, and hiking, and boating. And I said, I'm doing this every year. I didn't feel that way about Greenland. What I felt was I was really privileged to go. I went to a part of the world where the climate is incredibly extreme and harsh, and the elements are, well, you one mistake and you're dead. I've often said to many people, I'll go to Alaska every year for the rest of my life. It's so dramatic and it's just so spectacular. Greenland is dramatic and it's spectacular. I don't think it's a place you go every year. Some of you might disagree. Certainly, I talked at the end of the show last week about the tourism industry that's coming for Greenland, and I'm afraid that is going to destroy the Greenland that I saw or that's been around for quite a while. And that, of course, is the extension of a runway that's going to take place in Nuuk in the southwestern part of the continent, where planes literally from London and New York and Los Angeles will be able to land in Nuuk. And ecotourism is going to explode. Right now, there really aren't hotels to accommodate it. In fact, there are not hotels to accommodate. There's one nice hotel in Nuuk, and then you've got some places that probably a lot of us might have stayed in when we were in our 20s, but we're not interested in staying in today. And the cruise industry is coming. And I made a reference last week about how Juneau and Ketchikan and Sitka have been, in my view, just destroyed by these floating hotels called cruise ships. They're coming to Greenland, but there's no infrastructure. When you get off a boat in Nuuk, you have nowhere to go. You can walk around a little bit, but it's not like Juneau, where over 1,200,000 people in a six-month period get off these floating hotels in Juneau and walk around the town and can buy every little knick-knack you ever wanted. Nuuk is not set up that way, but I do think that the tourism that's coming to Nuuk is unstoppable, and it will change a continent, and Greenland is a continent that has, well, since we know time began, been off the grid and is a very tough place to live. And there's really not a lot of reasons to live there unless you are providing services, but it's nothing's manufactured there. But I'm afraid that Greenland is going to see its days as a remote, it'll be remote always, but as a seldom visited part of the world come to an end, at least as it relates to the number of people that have been there over the last 50 years versus what are certainly coming over the next decade. When we were in Greenland, we did talk to a number of people, particularly the captain of the boat we were on, about his thoughts on climate change. And he said there's no question in his mind and that of other Greenlanders who spend their life on the sea that things are changing. And it made me think quite a bit about sort of that comment, they're changing. Well, how are we going to adapt to that change? Because it's inevitable. And this may not make someone like John Kerry happy, but I'm going to walk out on a plank here this morning, and I'm going to say we have sea level rise. Everybody says we're going to have sea level rise. You can find very few people who don't think we're going to have sea level rise. Okay, we're going to have sea level rise. Let's stop hyperventilating about we're going to have sea level rise, and let's start thinking about what does that mean and how do we address it. And I say that as someone who has spent my entire life in the conservation world, in the outdoor community. If you know something is going to happen, you either prepare for it or you get wiped out by it. And I think we're at a state now where, let's just assume, at least for this morning on the Great Outdoors show, let's just assume we're going to have sea level rise. And let's assume it might even be worse than people think. What does that mean? That means absolutely. Why would anyone be moving to the coast of Florida? Why would Florida be the fastest growing state in the United States? Why would people be moving to Charleston, South Carolina, which is one of the lowest lying cities in America? We are making these decisions on one hand because we love the lifestyle, and on the other hand, we're making it without acknowledging what I think most people now would agree is an inevitability. The oceans are going to rise. And when the oceans rise, Miami's going underwater more often than not. Charleston, South Carolina is going underwater. Charleston had terrible flooding in the past few weeks with the storms that came through the southeast and the heavy rain. Well, Charleston basically was built on a swamp. Chicago was built on a swamp. Chicago, if you went back to the 1830s, Chicago was a swamp. In the 1850s, it was a swamp. They put the Union Stockyards where they put the Union Stockyards because it wasn't in the swamp. Most of the eastern part of Chicago is built on landfill. Chicago is a different area when it comes to sea level rise because we're one of the Great Lakes and we can control the level of the water. We're not subject to rises in the ocean affecting Chicago. But anybody in the world who lives in coastal areas and low-lying areas certainly has to look themselves in the mirror and saying, we're going to have sea level rise. Why am I here? Why do banks make 30-year mortgages on houses that, if you look on one hand, are supposed to be underwater in the next 50 years? I don't understand it, but in Greenland, it really kind of brought this home to me. Nobody lives in Greenland. 50,000 people live in Greenland. No, so when I say nobody, I mean in a context of very few people live in Greenland. And they live on the water's edge, but they actually live high out of the water. We didn't see any evidence of people in Greenland living right on the water, right on the beach, if you will, because they don't have beaches, they have glaciers. So take that point of view and match it up with what we're hearing about sea levels are going to rise, and they're going to rise by several feet, and it's terrible. It might be terrible. What are you going to do about it? You're not going to do anything about it. Our sea levels are going to rise. All the scientists that I read about and that I interact with, I cannot find one who doesn't think the oceans aren't going to rise. And I can find very few who actually think we're going to do anything about that rise. It's certainly not doing anything about that rise in the near future. So whether you're on the coast of Maine in a low-lying area, whether you're in South Carolina or whether you're in Florida, or unfortunately, if you're in Louisiana, this is going to happen, and we're not going to stop it. So that's my thought as I left Greenland behind. In part was, here's a very small community that will be impacted by the amount of sea level rise, potentially more than others, because the Arctic is going to be more impacted. But there's so few people. The question is, will they really be impacted at all, other than the water's going to rise a few feet? The rest of the world, we're not so lucky. But the bottom line for me as I flew out of Greenland was, we keep saying this is going to happen. We know it's going to happen. So what are we going to do to move? Because we're not going to stop it. As I said, this may not make someone like John Kerry, who's dedicated the last 30 years of his life to trying to change this. The reality is, it's coming. We are not going to change it. Either you move, you spend a lot of money building seawalls, you go underwater. And what will this mean for coastal fishing and all these things? That's the discussion for another day. But I do have to believe that as I sign off before a break, I think we need to come to grips with, stop complaining about it and start realizing it's real. And whether we caused it or not is not the discussion. And I'm not going there this morning, and I never go there. Whether this is man-made caused or solar caused or whatever caused it, it really doesn't matter. We need to stop signing blame and start realizing it's the future. I'll be back in just a moment with much more on the Great Outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And I do just want to revisit for one quick moment what I signed off with, and that is we have a responsibility, armed with the knowledge we have, to plan for the future about rising sea level. We also have a responsibility to stop assigning blame and instead recognize it's real and how are we going to deal with it, not how we're going to stop it, because we're not going to stop it. There is no way that we are going to stop the world's oceans from rising, at least not at any time in the horizon that anyone can talk about in a life expectancy of anybody alive today. Moving from that, I would like to talk for a moment about what is going on with, this is a subject today about energy, what is going on with wind farms. And what's going on with wind farms is lots of people are really unhappy. And they're unhappy because they never signed up to have their viewscapes become that of looking at windmills going around, blotting out the landscape. And that's what's happening, and it's coming fast. This drive to put up wind farms as fast as we possibly can all over the continent is now running into long-term, strong opposition from communities around America that don't want their land scarred with windmills. And because windmills don't go up in the middle of cities, they go up in rural areas, the political firestorm coming is a little bit different. You may recall that many years ago, the U.S. government wanted to put wind farms, big wind farms, off the coast of Long Island and Nantucket. Well, people didn't like that, and it didn't happen, at least until relatively recently, and they went a lot further offshore than people thought they might go. So what's different about Illinois, Iowa, Texas, Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Indiana? Why should we be the receptacle of these wind farms without any kind of consideration what it does to the quality of our life? Furthermore, without consideration to the actual lifespan of these wind farms, I've met with a number of officials and experts recently in the field of energy, and they all say these wind farms, the windmills, the turbines that turn, first of all, they're extremely energy intensive to make, but beyond that, their lifespan is so much shorter than we ever anticipated. Maybe that will change. Maybe we'll make stronger wind turbines that turn around. But in the meantime, we are going headlong into this wind farm business on a massive scale and trashing the American landscape as we do. One last thought on energy before I leave this week for the show. This week, there's been a lot of talk about the move to electric vehicles. I would like to raise my hand, and hopefully all of you listening would raise your hands and say, I like to hunt, I like to fish, I like to camp, I like to go to remote places. What about me? My Chevy Silverado, truck I drive all over the country with, remote areas. How's that supposed to work when I'm in a remote area of Saskatchewan or North Dakota, or I'm up grouse hunting in the North Woods of Wisconsin? Where am I supposed to plug that in? And let's just say I go camping for several days and I come back to my vehicle. There are no chargers in our national forests. We haven't thought this through at all. And while the people making these decisions may say, oh, you're just a small part of the population, I don't buy it. I think that rural America is not going to tolerate being told that they have to drive electric vehicles any more than other people are going to tolerate this. And if one looks at what just happened with the electric truck market, you get a pretty good indication that farmers and ranchers and outdoor hunters and fishermen and anglers and campers, they're not buying them because they don't work on their lifestyle and they're not likely to work. They may be great in urban areas, but I think you're going to see an incredible blowback coming from the outdoor community on the mandate that we're not going to be able to go to rural places or we're not going to be able to spend time in the great outdoors because the vehicles that we're being told we have to drive, well, they aren't going to work in those environments. So we'll see what happens, but I'm getting a sense that people, at least in the outdoor community, are getting pretty fed up with being told this is how we're going to live and the equipment we're going to use when it's not even practical to the lifestyle and farms and ranches across America. My last thought of the day, start looking at the weather map. Start paying attention to what's going on in very remote places in North America because it's going to have a big impact on what happens come the winds of September, October, November, December that come from the north. Right now, we are looking at one of the worst drought cycles in the past 40 years on the breeding grounds of the United States and Canadian prairies. We have some time to fix it. They got a little bit of precipitation this past week across the Dakotas and into Prairie Canada. But by and large, this is a very, very dangerous drought we're headed into that has been compounded by the previous 3 years of being drier than normal. This is the driest winter of all in the last 4 years, which means that this summer, unless something changes, the drought will go from moderate in some areas to extreme and severe. And where it's been extreme and severe, it basically becomes the Sahara Desert. What happens in the next 45 days across the North Country, the United States and Canada, Southern Canada, will determine the fate of the largest bird migration in the world, that being the fate of waterfowl and wetland-dependent birds. Right now, we all need to do a rain dance. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.